This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Welcome to the Thursday, February 13th, 2020 edition of the Noon Business Hour. Coming to you live from inside a snow globe in downtown Chicago. The snow is still coming down as flurries. It looks pretty, and unless you're driving in it, we'll get the details from AccuWeather coming up in just a couple of minutes. Good afternoon. The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. The airline industry is suffering because of the spread of coronavirus. Cover that in our next segment. Right now, a measure of inflation is out today, along with the latest tally of jobless claims. We're joined now by Bob Bruska, chief economist with Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, welcome back to the program. The Consumer Price Index, the latest figures kind of fall in line with the Fed's projections on inflation. So this is not really much of a surprise, is it?
No, and these are pretty contained numbers. And remember, we're looking at numbers from the CPI, and the Fed has its target on the PCE index. And the PCE tends to run cooler than the CPI by 3 to 4 tenths of a percentage point at an annual rate over a year. So to the extent that the CPI looks like it's consistent with the Fed's target, the actual inflation result the Fed targets is probably lower.
Now, you can talk about the percentages of increase, or as the the federal figures are tallied. But how does this translate for the average American when they're at the store? I mean, what is it? What does it take for someone like me to notice that?
It would take probably very careful record keeping and a microscope. I think most of us don't.
I have both, by the way.
Most of us don't perceive inflation differences because inflation changes slowly. And even over the last year, you know, a 2% rise in inflation, what is that to you? You know, it's very, very hard to see that. But what we see are the prices of the things we buy every day. And this is kind of a problem in economics, that you tend to see the prices that you buy of things every day, and they tend to be smaller items. And so when those prices go up, you go, oh, my goodness. But a lot of people have rent that only changes once every year or 2 years, or maybe a mortgage that they've refinanced, and where the rate is locked in for 30 years, their taxes might go up. But this is why the price index behaves differently than what you think, because you've got to think of the weighting, how important things are, and then the frequency that you purchase things. Because the more frequently you purchase something, you're going, oh, my God, the price of eggs went up, the price of milk went up. You're going to notice that, but it's not going to have a big impact on the CPI or really even on your budget.
And then when it comes to one of the ongoing plot lines of the recovery, now 10 years old plus, is that paychecks have not been keeping up with the pace of job creation. Are we in danger at all of watching those meager gains in paychecks being wiped out by higher consumer prices?
I don't think that's what's happening. Wages are still running ahead of inflation. You know, the PCE index is right now below 2%. Wages are running north of 3%, around 3%, basically, looking at average hourly earnings. I think people are keeping up. They're actually getting ahead a little bit, but getting ahead at a very slow pace. There was a long period of wage stagnation, and so there's an argument about what should happen. And, of course, this is a big battle between Democrats and Republicans. But I'm going to tell you, when you listen to them argue about inflation, you hear people talk about the minimum wage. The thing they don't talk about is the fact that we import a lot of stuff from China. It's a global economy, and U.S. workers are not being taken advantage of by mean industrialists or rich people in the U.S. They're competing with people from China increasingly, and those wages are low, and the wages in Korea are low. And this is why wages haven't gone up in the U.S. You don't hear anybody in the political debates talking about this. They act as though it's been some great malfunction of the U.S. economy. And what it's been is it's been this opening of the economy and the thing that Donald Trump has been fighting to overturn. He's put tariffs on to try to force the Chinese to make changes, to try to get new investment in the U.S. And, you know, that's the way to do it. You can't just raise wages on people that are doing the same job. That will be inflationary, and it will actually lead to job losses. So I think people need to be careful and think carefully about these things, because when they voted this election, they're going to be putting people in power. They're right now, the way they're talking, don't seem to understand how economics works. And I'd be careful about that.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon, Bob Bruska, chief economist with Fact and Opinion Economics, delivering both this afternoon.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago-based United Airlines is canceling flights to and from China through April 24th. Let's update the fallout of the disease on travel with Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University based in Chicago. Joe, welcome back to the program. 30 years ago, when United Airlines bought the Asian routes from an ailing Pan Am, do you think they figured disease outbreaks into their long-term business plans?
Well, certainly not. Actually, I was working at United at the time, and remember that exciting day we bought the Pacific Division of Pan Am. And, United's really had a great run in Asia, and we had a year here that was just gangbusters, and this Asian crisis, with coronavirus, just seems to get worse. We thought maybe we were rounding the corner, but yesterday it's clear we're not there yet.
Obviously the flights are canceled through April 24th, but we've seen this with the 737 MAX crisis where all of a sudden it's another 6 weeks of the schedule, then 12, then 18. How long is United prepared to hold out here?
Well, that's exactly right. We've had sort of a slow build on this, and we thought flights might be back running by late March. Now we're looking at April 24th, is the earliest. And I think what we're seeing now is the uncertainty is just killing the travel business. We even had a big conference, travel conference in Barcelona canceled this week, just because when you take China out of the global tourist supply chain, it just affects everything. So right now what's happening is, there's sort of a cloud over the whole Asian market. People traveling to Japan and Vietnam and so forth are all being affected psychologically by this, as well as the fact that Chinese travelers can't fly out like before, and that's starting to have ripple effects here.
Now, in the does every airline in the world, do they have kind of a musty box that says, in case of emergency, look here, filled with all of their worst-case scenario plans, evacuation in the event of war, pandemic, and is United following that plan, or do these airlines kind of make them up based on what the government's telling them?
Well, they've been through a couple, crises before with the SARS virus and so forth, and I think the secret for them financially is just to pull down as many flights on the schedule as you can. The problem is that creates, severe hardship for people that, are stuck in China and so forth. And that's what we're seeing is now they added Hong Kong to the mix, and previously Hong Kong was being treated as a special case. Vietnam Airlines said they're pulling down flights because people aren't coming to Asia like they used to. And it's really odd here in the United States, or coincidental, the Southwest, which doesn't, of course, fly to Asia, is being really hurt by the MAX crisis, and American and Delta and United are being really hurt in Asia. So everybody's sharing some pretty heavy pain right now.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University. Coming up next, the latest on coronavirus, both in the U.S. and overseas.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The U.S. reporting another case of coronavirus. Well, there is an update today on a quarantined cruise ship. We welcome in Robert Langreth, who's a healthcare reporter with Bloomberg News based in New York. Robert, welcome to the program. Here are the numbers from around the world. The U.S. confirming a 15th case as global cases soar above 60,300. And one of the big doubts is whether or not you can trust the numbers out of China. Is that the case?
Well, so one of the things that researchers and public health authorities in the U.S. and Europe have been saying and were worried about was that basically the epicenter of this outbreak in the Hubei province of China, they're basically, weren't able to really, keep track of all the infections in these just overwhelmed hospitals there. And and the number of cases are being reported really just depended on their capacity for the number of tests they got done. But patients are being turned away, or some patients are just getting sick at home and not even able to get to the hospital. So that's been one of the big, concerns all along, that these numbers were undercounts. And sure enough, last night they updated, they revised their counting estimates and put in a whole surge of about 15,000 new cases. And basically, these appear to be suspected cases or suspected based on lung scans, but haven't been confirmed with the official test. And that's probably because, you know, they just didn't have the capacity to do those tests, so the hospitals were overwhelmed. So they've started counting those now as cases. Now, it kind of appears to me what they're doing is this really is a backlog they're kind of catching up with and putting all these cases in the backlog, just shoving them out now as reported cases. So it's not thought to be the case that all these 15,000 cases are new cases or reported overnight. These are basically catching up with the backlog and, you know, getting some of the bad news out now as they're replacing some of the top officials in China dealing with this outbreak. So that makes all the numbers kind of very hard to compare and very hard to tell kind of what's going on. So it's a very confusing situation in China.
And very quickly, though, any sign that this is slowing down?
Well, among the kind of confirmed cases, there were signs that the confirmed cases, laboratory confirmed cases, had stopped going up. But certainly, this is a new virus. Like every new virus is different, and it's just very hard to tell, what's going to happen going forward, because this does, in a lot of people, appear to produce mild symptoms, and people spread it before they even know what they have, and that makes it much harder to stop, despite the very aggressive efforts to do quarantines and to shut down travel.
Thanks for the information, Robert Langreth, healthcare reporter for Bloomberg News based in New York. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, the slower-than-expected arrival of self-driving cars.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The parent company of the Miami Herald, Kansas City Star, and dozens of other newspapers files for bankruptcy protection. In Technology Thursday, the latest on the progress of the self-driving car, which is coming along slower than originally predicted. Special education students in the Chicago public schools will finally get the extra services they're legally entitled to. And then the 15th confirmed case of coronavirus in the U.S. is a person who had been evacuated from China and now under quarantine in Texas. WBBM Business, the markets are lower right now. The Dow is down 66 points, the NASDAQ is down 1, and the S&P 500 is down just a fraction. AccuWeather says the winter weather advisory still in effect for Northwest Indiana until 9 o'clock tonight. That's because the snow machine still churning away in Northwest Indiana, 2 to 4 inches of additional accumulation possible in Northwest Indiana. Highs today in the teens, but then we will tumble to zero tonight, and the wind chills will be below zero as the night rolls on, though. But the good news is we will have clear skies. WBBM News Time, 12:31, as we continue following the news affecting your money at this hour. France is warning the coronavirus outbreak will dent the world economy. French government calculations project the epidemic will shave at least one percentage point off of the growth this year in China's economy. The French economic minister says the impact on global growth will be greater than during the SARS epidemic in 2003 because China's economy is a far larger component of the world economy than it was 16 years ago. Auto sales in China have plunged, deepening in an already painful downturn in the industry's biggest global market. It's also adding to the economic pressure as the country fights the coronavirus outbreak. And industry groups say sales of SUVs, sedans, and minivans fell 20.2% in January from a year earlier. The industry has been hurt by Beijing's decision to extend the Lunar New Year holiday in order to keep families at home and reduce the chances of the virus spreading. The chief executive of Airbus says his company sees no short-term benefit from Boeing's troubles with its grounded 737 MAX. That's because the competing A320 is sold out for years ahead. CEO Guillaume Fiori says safety is a shared concern in the industry. He made the remarks at the company's earnings news conference after reported a loss of $1.48 billion in 2019 because of a multi-billion-dollar bribery settlement with authorities in three countries. Energy giant BP says it aims to eliminate or offset all carbon emissions from its operations and the oil and gas it sells to customers by 2050. The London-based company is the latest energy industry leader to set out its ambitions to combat global climate change. Let's check in now with Lou Stanislavovich, who is the president and CEO of Legend Financial Advisors based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Lou, welcome to the program. Let's talk about the big word on everybody's mind, and that is the impact of coronavirus on the world economy, just because, as one analyst said earlier in this segment, China is a much larger component of the world economy and a much larger driver of the American economy compared to 17 years ago in 2003. So what can you really make projections or predictions on how that's going to affect the GDP, U.S. GDP in 2020?
But it's probably going to shave a couple tenths of a percent at a minimum off of the U.S. GDP just because of, people are going to stop traveling, and especially going to the Far East. So that's going to obviously hurt situations like the airlines, luxury ships, things of that nature. And it'll hurt the U.S. Foreign relation, or I'm sorry, corporations with foreign holdings and such, manufacturers that'll all curtail all that. Hotels, for example, is another example. That you have also the manufacturing of cars. All of that is going to slow down. And you can, if you read the stories from China, basically they're not good. People are staying indoors. People are not traveling. And so it's going to affect their economy, but it's going to certainly spill over into the U.S.
Moving on to another topic entirely, and that is the troubles at Kraft Heinz. Shares sliding 8%, shoppers skipping processed food. Did this mean America is falling out of love with ketchup and mac and cheese?
I don't think it's falling out of love with ketchup and mac and cheese. However, there are products that are not doing as well. The stock has been on a slide for basically 2 years plus right now. Well, actually 17, 18, and 19. So I guess it's 3 years now. And basically most food manufacturing companies do not have great growth rates. Instead, these folks have negative growth rates. And so, their sales are sliding, things of that nature. Certain product lines will do very well, and that's why I doubt very few people will not use ketchup or other condiments, but there's a lot of other foods that they are not doing and are not buying, and so you're going to be seeing some slides. It's going to be a turnaround situation for them, and it's going to take a while. It's not going to happen overnight.
And then lastly, and very quickly, Tesla planning a $2 billion stock offering, which is kind of a surprise compared to based on a couple of weeks ago when they said they wouldn't be seeking any more funding.
Well, that's, that will be from time to time a turnaround, a change in direction, I guess is the best way to put it. If you recall the late 90s, a lot of tech companies that were skyrocketing their stock prices, they came out with new offerings because or additional offerings of stock. And the additional offerings of stock tend to be cost very little in terms of capital in the overall picture because the stock is rocketing upward. And so it becomes more of a lesser effect to investors, although certainly existing investors aren't happy about issuing new stock, but this is actually very good for the company in order to raise capital when it's cheap. And when you see I guess it's up 250% roughly since October, the stock, you're buying it with you're selling the stock for very cheap capital, and it makes a lot of sense, actually.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon, Lou Stanislavovich from Legend Financial Advisors in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, well, the self-driving car isn't at the point it was expected to be at by now. How come that self-driving car isn't on the roads?
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday, and this afternoon we're updating the advancement of the self-driving car with Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor of The Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, welcome back to the program. Now, this segment is not going to be about our general disappointment in the fact that you can't read a book while driving a car, at least not yet, but there are some elements of the self-driving car that are now in the average family minivan.
Well, yeah, for the record, speaking of the family minivan, a child can read a book while a car is driven by his parent.
That is true. However, that's always been true, unless they get motion sickness.
Exactly. So children have self-driving cars as we speak. However, you're absolutely right. And in spite of the fact that roughly, and this is by a number of different estimates, about $80 billion has been spent so far on self-driving technology, there are no fully autonomous and what the industry insiders call level five cars, which are fully autonomous without any driver input. There are none of those on the road. That's true. However, folks who got excited because they saw some initial versions of this a couple years ago thought things would move more quickly, but they are moving. So anybody who follows tech knows that the initial promise is not necessarily followed quickly by practice, but there are lots of examples of self-driving technology in cars right now that you can use.
Well, one example is in the good old reliable Chrysler Pacifica, which is the Hart family grocery getter. It freaks out and stops if it looks like if the car senses it's about to hit the garbage can. So that technology is in that particular model. There are some cars that can parallel park themselves. So this seems like a nice little way to split the difference.
That's exactly right. In fact, by the way, a lot of these so-called self-driving technologies are basically safety technologies. And to your point, if a pedestrian crosses in front of a car before the driver recognizes or you know, with not much time left, there are many systems out there. Toyota has one, Nissan has one, Tesla has one, of course, and lots of other companies that will automatically, without the driver's input, stop the vehicle. So that's a big deal. And to your point, in fact, one of my college classmates was the lady in the Smat Pack ad, the Hyundai ad during the Super Bowl, and that's one of those that literally parked itself without a person in it, and that's a Hyundai technology. So bottom line is there are lots of self-driving technologies, none that yet drive the car itself without your input.
Is the a lot of companies made a lot tried to drum up some publicity for themselves by saying, well, we're developing the self-driving truck, the self-driving cab. In the future, we won't need truckers anymore because the truckers will move themselves. Does that future seem likely at all, or is this the extent of self-driving technology, just safety features that can enhance the driver's experience and not take it over entirely?
That's a great question. And the short answer is, in fact, you've put your finger on exactly the first technologies that will, in fact, be fully autonomous. First of all, the short answer is for anybody who analyzes the industry, answer is yes, those are happening. And those first the first shots across the bow, so to speak, will be taxis, Uber-like vehicles, you know, self-driving vehicles for pedestrians who want to get a taxi right now, and also in trucking. Those two are close. The biggest barrier is not, in fact, the technology. Now that the servers are faster, the sensors in the vehicles are faster, what's called edge computing, where right there at the edge, it decides whether or not to slow or speed up. The biggest challenge is infrastructure. Will there be sensors and feedback by the side of the road that can keep all those vehicles on there? But again, taxis and trucks will be the first.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. We meet the head of a company that hopes to take some of the space being left by the exit of Peapod. And still to come, a major newspaper chain files for bankruptcy.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
McClatchy, the publisher of the Miami Herald and dozens of other newspapers across the country, is filing for bankruptcy protection. Let's get the latest now from Tom Hudson, Week Ahead columnist with McClatchy Tribune News Services based in Miami. And Tom, we should clarify, you work closely with McClatchy and the Miami Herald, but you're not an employee of the company. Online readership, people giving up their subscriptions because they do everything off their phone. Is there any way for the newspaper industry to totally adapt? Some seem to have made the pivot. Others just may not survive.
Yeah, I think there is, Rob. And obviously, I've got a vested interest in a healthy press, healthy media, as do you, as does, you know, the rest of civil society, certainly. And I think there is, although the profit margins are going to look a lot different and do look a lot different. There's no doubt about it. Certainly, this pivot to digital with the national brands, you've seen success. at the New York Times. You've seen success with the Wall Street Journal. You've seen growing success with the Washington Post. It's these super regional and regional newspapers like the Chicago Tribune, like the Miami Herald, like the Los Angeles Times that have had more difficulty in doing this. Where the investments are happening, I can tell you, in the journalism side, are really local and regional investigative stories. The Miami Herald broke open the Jeffrey Epstein story late last year, of course. And, you know, that's where the investment has been, and that's where you're seeing some places really pay off with audience growth and digital growth. I think for McClatchy here, what has caught up with it is not only the drop in advertising, of course, with traditional newspaper display advertising, but then also the pension obligations. Those two forces combined prove to be insurmountable for the company.
Very quickly, Tom, when it comes to the pension obligations for McClatchy employees, those who have retired, are they still going to get the benefits that were promised to them, or do they have to readjust their lifestyle?
Right now, it is essentially a negotiation between McClatchy, as they filed for bankruptcy, and the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is a quasi-governmental agency, to see if the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation will take over those pension obligations and under what terms.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Tom Hudson of McClatchy Tribune News Services, based in Miami. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind at the time you want. We have that pause and rewind function. It works online and by updating the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.